Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile November until suffering baseball withdrawal around the clock. When April comes, hey, meet me down on Yawkey Way. That's when Red Sox Nation starts to rock. I'm a member of a Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox Nation.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to not just another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast, the 100th episode of the podcast. We will be covering Boston Red Sox baseball and mostly actually MLB wide hot stove, but there will be some Red Sox related discussion with it as well. For everyone staying up late tonight on Periscope, the podcast can be found, as always, on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, Player FM, and basically wherever you can find it on Google. I am Terry Cushman, and tonight I am joined, as always, by Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm good, Terry, and yourself?
Pretty good. Just going to tag team it tonight, the two of us. So diving right into it, we'll get into Manny Machado. And then for the audience, we will also talk about Andrew Miller and Steve Pierce. But leading off with Machado, what are your opening thoughts and expectations for where he might end up?
You know, let me just start with this. As a caveat, I hate Manny Machado. I think he's a scumbag. I think he's a dirty player. I don't hate every dirty or player that kind of plays on that line. I hate the guy who pretends like he's a choir boy and then spikes people and steps on people's foot on first base and just does things that, you know, generally speaking, are really, like, open and obviously dirty. So just as a caveat to my Machado thoughts, in my opinion, he's unequivocally a goddamn scumbag. Okay, so now that that's off my chest. I don't think he's a shortstop, and I don't know why the Orioles and then the Dodgers were willing to placate that. I wish I had some advanced statistics on his defense metrics, but assuming that whoever's going to sign him is at least initially going to have to put him at shortstop, I think that's a factor in wherever he ends up going. He is an elite offensive player. The thing that I would caution some teams about is the fact that for the large portion of his career, except for like this, obviously the year with the Dodgers, and was it 2 or 3 years ago, they won like 88 games, the Orioles. He really has largely not had a had a impact on a team that's even at or above 500. So if you're the type of team that thinks Manny Machado is going to put you over the top, you know, that's this guy's not for you. On the flip side, if you're a team that, you know, you're already there, but let's say you do have a glaring hole, you know, maybe with run production, he is the type of guy for you. The money is going to be crazy. And Terry, I'm actually going to defer to you on your thoughts on this first, but let me just end my opening commentary with, we spoke at length about Bryce Harper's marketability as a clean-cut guy, family guy, no trouble, really, except for some in the clubhouse stuff, where we discussed, and I truly believe his value is at least to some extent related to his marketability. Manny Machado, to me, because of the image that he has, I don't think he's really an electric personality. Obviously, I think he's a scumbag. I think his value is going to be south of Bryce Harper. So, you know, just some of my opening thoughts on Manny.
I think a lot of people are going to agree with you on his character. He's not a classy guy. The Red Sox have learned that the hard way with the Dustin Pedroia blow up, where, you know, he spiked him sliding into second and whatnot. And then it seemed like as soon as he got to the Dodgers and he was no longer managed by Buck Showalter, the dirtiness just exploded, and there were all kinds of incidents. He stepped on Aguilar, the Brewers' first baseman, and then he did it with Pierce. There was another incident, I think. Let's see, where was it? He spiked someone else as well.
In that Brewers series, he spiked their first baseman, right-handed power Dominican bat. I can't remember his name right now.
Aguilar, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you say that?
Yeah. And okay. But
that's,
he also,
I'm aware of.
Right. And he hit Vasquez a couple of times with his backswing, and I think had done that previously in the playoffs as well. So, I mean, it just, whichever manager takes him on is going to have a whole bag of issues to deal with. And then you had, you know, just the press conference blunders where he said he wasn't Johnny Hustle and he never has been and never will be. That can't sound good. His agent couldn't have been happy about that. And then I think, I can't remember, it was game 4 or 5 of the World Series where he hit a ball that looked like it might have been a home run, and he kind of, you know, kind of took his time and was pretty nonchalant, and then turned out it just bounced off the wall, and because of his lack of hustle, as I was just talking about, it ended up just being a long single when it would have been a double for anyone else. So you got those things, you know, to deal with, and everybody looks at the Red Sox and the Yankees to be players for every major free agent, and I think we can agree the Red Sox aren't going to be in on Machado, much like they're not going to be in on Bryce Harper. And the Yankee, we'll get to them specifically in a minute, but fans of both fan bases, the Red Sox and the Yankees, seem to want very little to do with Machado, you know. And I think, you know, the money's obviously going to be big, but I think his character even resonates with us. I mean, he's been a division rival, and neither fan base is interested in acquiring his services. So, I mean, that's I think that says a lot.
Yeah, it does. It does say a lot. I mean, I've come out, you know, on him right away with that to kind of get it out of the way. To get back to the team-specific issues, why the two main spenders, because obviously the Dodgers have already said they're going back to their previous shortstop, who's coming back from an injury. The Red Sox are so well set that there's just no need for him. I mean, Bogarts is still in his arbitration years. With Devers and Nunez and Holt, there's no spot for him, let alone why would you spend the money on Machado, which would basically eliminate you from the Betts sweepstakes. So to me, it's just a no-brainer. With the Yankees, and I said this the other day, please sign Machado. Sign him to $300 million for 17 years. Please, please sign him and ignore your pitching staff. They need pitching. They do not need another. They don't need another power bat. They got more power bats than they know what to do with. Okay, and I really like Didi Gregorius. I think he hurt his elbow in the last week of the, maybe even the last game of the year. I can't remember. So there's some question about his availability, at least to start next season. But Didi Gregorius to me is a top 5-6 shortstop, maybe 8, top 8 shortstop. There's just no reason. I think he's an $8 or $9 million a year guy. He's in his arbitration years. That to me is just a no-brainer. There's just no need for it. And then they've got some young talent in other infield spots where they just don't need him again. And they are desperate for pitching. We talked about Keuchel last podcast, and I was so surprised that Chris really had no interest in him as a Yankees fan. So I think it just goes to show you that maybe they don't know what they want in New York, but they know it's not another power bat. As far as where he's going to go, a pretty good website that I think you turned me on to is MLBTradeRumors.com. They have Manny going to the Phillies. By the way, Philadelphia and Manny Machado deserve each other, but that's maybe a different topic for a different day. 13 years, $390 million. I'm sorry. That is monopoly money. That is just ridiculous. And we talked about Harper getting money because of his marketability. Like, I don't know. I just don't see this. And the Phillies, you said it. I think you did a couple minutes on it, where basically Philadelphia has come out and basically said, hey, look, we're willing to spend money. So the Phillies are a young up-and-coming team. They have an unusual style of manager and Gabe Kapler, who basically just completely lets the baseball metrics make all of his decisions. So he's pulling guys like after 3 2/3 innings, even though they're cruising. It's just weird stuff happening over there. They got an up and coming team. They absolutely could use a guy like Machado. Just the money seems crazy. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people in the Manny Machado sweepstakes. When you're talking about that type of money, you already eliminate 2/3 of the league. You already eliminate the Sox. You eliminate the Yankees. You eliminate the Dodgers. You're getting down to 5-6 teams max that would have any interest, anywhere near the money he's asking for. So Philadelphia would be. It has always kind of seemed like a natural landing spot. I just think the money is crazy. To go over 10 years, just it seems unnecessary. I do think he's going to end up in Philadelphia. Those rumors have been going for 2 or 3 years now. So to get ahead of my prediction, I do think he'll go to the Phillies, and I think it'll be 10 years, $275 million.
Yeah, it's kind of hard right now because most of the attention is on Harper and his market looks more and more limited by the day in terms of the number of teams that might be in play for him. So maybe things don't get too hot and heavy with Machado until the Harper stuff gets worked out. But like you said, MLB Trade Rumors does have him 13 years, $390 million. I think that's way off the charts. I don't think that's realistic at all. Sport Track has him at 6 years, $160 million, which works out to be $26.8 million annually. I think the annual figure for them is probably on the money, but I feel like it'll probably be at least an 8-year deal. So that pushes it up to roughly 220 or so, 210, 220. And I think it is going to be in the twos. I don't think it'll eclipse 300 million, and it could drift up towards 275, your figure, should the annual number come up to say 30, 32 million. So there's still a long way to go, until he gets signed. I don't think anything is imminent. With the Yankees specifically, they are talking about adding two starting pitchers. James Paxton has been connected to them. He's also connected to the Astros. But it's interesting that they're looking at trades right now versus signing anyone, because Keuchel is out there. Dallas Keuchel probably will be affordable, for a big market team anyway. Patrick Corbin has been connected to them since last summer, but they seem to be exploring trades right now. If they were to end up being in play for Machado, though, I think it would be later in the hot stove season if the market tends to fall. If the market falls fairly low, say it gets closer to that sport track figure, 6 years, 160, I don't know why it would, but if it did, I think they would probably become players in that. You mentioned Gregorius, one of the better shortstops in the game. His availability, he's probably going to miss the first 2 months per a couple reports that I saw. So he could conceivably rejoin the team in early June following his Tommy John rehab, which is obviously a lot quicker for a position player than it is a pitcher. And I think shortstop would be where he would play for now, because they have Miguel Andujar, and it boggles my mind that he ends up in trade talks and that they're not completely adamant that he'll be their third baseman going forward, because he did hit .297 last year, 27 home runs, 92 RBIs. He had a better year than Andrew Benintendi did, and maybe he's obviously not as good defensively at his respective position, but definitely a really good bat. So, I mean, for the Yankees to blow all that money on Machado just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, given the cheap homegrown talent they had. Another team in the American League, the only other one I can really see being in play for him might be the White Sox, but who really knows? It's tough to tell how far away they are from being competitive. They do have a decent farm, but I don't know. And then getting over to the National League, the Cardinals could probably be in play for him as a shortstop. The Chicago Cubs in the past week have come out and said they will basically listen to any trade scenario with any of their players, basically. And Chris Bryant's name was brought up. So if Bryant were to be moved, maybe the ulterior is to sign Machado. I have no idea if that's the angle they're working on. It would be a big middle finger to Scott Boras, because they would be peddling his client, Chris Boras, out of a big market, not getting themselves in on the Bryce Harper sweepstakes, and then going after the other big fish. That's, who knows really, like I said, if that's the plan there, but it's a possibility. Interestingly, who says the Washington Nationals can't be in play for him? If he ends up being the discount between him and Harper, I mean, I wouldn't put anything past them, especially if they were willing to give up 10 years, $30 million per year, $300 million overall. If we both agree that Machado's not going to reach that, I don't know. I don't know that the Nationals aren't in play for him. The Phillies, obviously a fit, and like you said, they deserve each other. It's a very toxic market for a toxic player. And who knows, with their hardcore analytical philosophy, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they, basically became what the Nationals have been the last decade. And then the dark horse team, the San Diego Padres, they're prone to doing stupid stuff, and they're not far off from competing. So I think he stays National League. Phillies are probably the most willing of anyone, like you said, to pay the stupid money. So that's a definite landing spot for him, I would say.
Well, there is a lot there, and I didn't get all of your comments down in note form, so I'm only going to respond to the stuff that I'm going to be able to recall. I think we're in the same spot in the Yankees, and I think anybody that's covering baseballs hasn't disagreed with us about the Yankees. The only thing I will say about Machado is that he is so good that you could look at a team and go, well, they don't need a shortstop. But then it's like, that team's management may say, well, we don't need a shortstop. But how often does a guy like Manny Machado come around? So do we like our shortstop? Yeah. Do we like Didi Gregorius if you're the Yankees, for example? Yeah, we do. But he's not Manny Machado. So now with that said, the money in New York is getting tight. And with the luxury tax threshold in place and all, and the fact that they do need pitching, I immediately crossed the Yankees off. The only thing I will say about the Yankees is Cashman came out and said right away, we're not interested in Bryce Harper. I haven't heard him say that about Manny Machado. So that's a little interesting. Just a little side note. Padres, White Sox, I lump in the same category. They're too far away. And Machado is going to get some nibbles from teams that are already in that contender mode. So it just, I think it would say a lot about Manny Machado if he goes and signs with some team like the White Sox or Padres who are not built to win now. And I understand he's probably going to sign somewhere between 6 and 10 years. But he was on a perpetual loser in Baltimore. And I don't know. I don't think he's going to do that. And I don't know Manny Machado like I know, Xander Bogaerts or a Red Sox guy. I haven't heard his comments in large part about his free agency. So maybe I'm missing the boat here, but it just seems to me to not be a natural fit. I've already talked about the Phillies. I've already said it just seems like the Phillies are the natural landing spot because they've said they're going to spend money, because they've already said they want Manny Machado, and because he hasn't necessarily dispelled those rumors. So to me, there's three teams that I would just touch on briefly. The one is, is there any chance that he pulls a reverse course and goes back to the Orioles now that they've got some assets for his trade? I haven't heard anything about this. He never said he hated Baltimore, as far as I know. They are really far away. They stink. They lost what did they lose? Like 115 games. I mean, they are a goddamn dumpster fire. So you'd say, well, Jeremy, then you got to lump them in with your White Sox and Padres comments. I don't, simply because obviously he grew up in that system. So, just a little comment on the Orioles. I do not think he'll go there. I haven't heard anything from anyone that is in the know that he has a opportunity to go back there. The Cubs seem like a long shot. Now, they did mention Chris Bryant. And by the way, I've heard Theo Epstein for the better part of two decades say no one's untouchable. And he'll take phone calls on everybody. That's been his MO since back in his early Red Sox days. He also said that it was a virtual certainty or just shy of a virtual certainty or something like that was his quote, that Chris Bryant is not going anywhere. So it seems to me that Theo is not going to overspend on Manny Machado because he's going to want to keep that team good and relevant for the foreseeable future, and they have an opportunity to do that. So to me, Manny Machado shortens your window by eating up all those dollars, and for that reason, I just don't think the Cubs are a legitimate possibility unless you get down into the six-year, $25 million per range. Because if that is the market, then I think you're going to see a whole bunch of teams jump in on him, including maybe the Yankees, which is why maybe the Yankees haven't said they don't want him like they did with Bryce Harper. The Nationals are interesting. They did offer the 10 and 300 to Bryce, so you'd think that they'd be willing to maybe go that way with Machado. With that said, again, I do think he goes back to Philadelphia. Now, Terry, I'd like to just touch on one topic, and maybe you want to jump in and finish your thoughts on the team-by-team analysis first, but I do want to talk about the Pedroia situation before we move on to Andrew Miller.
Sure, go ahead.
That was a dirty play, and there's no question about it. But that play has, as a Red Sox fan, turned me against Pedroia at the same time. That is one of the more unusual plays in Major League Baseball since I've been a fan. And I probably go back to like 89 or 90 where I started watching the far majority of the games. No one came out of that situation looking good. Pedroia threw his teammates under the bus. The pitching staff came out and did what you know old school baseball players would do, and then Pedroia came out and said, "Well, don't throw at him. I didn't ask for this." All that stuff. Machado, that was kind of the birth of his douchebaggery, in my opinion. And you know, Pedroia hasn't been able to get healthy, and I think like Machado doesn't get talked about enough about how what he's done, being reckless, running the bases, and just otherwise being a dirty player. With the Aguilar play in the NLDS and the Steve Pierce play in the World Series, those guys didn't get injured, and in both cases, those guys stayed in the game. And obviously, it gets overshadowed because the Red Sox wound up, I think, winning the World Series the game he did that. Machado may have ruined and ended Pedroia's season. Career. He played three games this year. He was 1 for 21 or whatever the hell he was. He sucked. And I call him the little leader. And I think he is an eyesore on this roster. And that contract is another contract in the line of bad contracts that this team just seems willing to offer every three or so years. But for whatever reason, and you see it a lot more in hockey where it's like a nasty hit ends a guy's career and that guy's like got a stain on him. You know, he becomes a dirty player. Machado ended Pedroia's career. That's what it looks like right now. You know, it just doesn't get talked about. And I don't understand that. And maybe I see him differently than the rest of the fan base and the media sees Manny Machado, but by all accounts, Pedroia is not going to be ready next year. And if he is, it's going to be like in the middle or late part of the year. Just something. It's just odd. It's just odd. And obviously no one came out of that looking good, but it looks like ended a potential Hall of Fame player's career. And it's just not talked about.
He might have. And Pedroia had undergone a more minor surgery before the 2017 season than he did before the 2018 season, which was a more, you know, major comprehensive surgery. So, I mean, his knee was bad to begin with, but he might have. And that whole thing was weird. And the fact that Pedroia, you know, completely threw the entire bullpen under the bus was pretty stunning. And, they were just trying to show him that, you know, they had his back. And that in and of itself became probably the bigger controversy of that whole series, more so than Machado sliding into his leg. But I mean, that's the player that Machado is. And I hope teams take that into account. I hope that literally costs him $100 million over the course of the next decade, whatever his contract ends up being. But you're right, though. Not a lot of people talk about that. They'll definitely talk about his antics throughout the playoffs, but I'm not sure. And with Pedroia, that major surgery he had, the cartilage restoration surgery, it's relatively new. I don't really know any other athletes who have had it so far. I'm sure there might be a few others, but no one notable. And Stephen Wright had that, though, on the Red Sox, and he had complications and wasn't really ready for the playoffs. And both of them ended up having, like, a second minor arthroscopic surgery to kind of clean some stuff up around those tendons in the knee. But that might not be a viable surgery for pro athletes going forward. I've even heard the term experimental used, you know, since Pedroia came back. So if it might have ended his career, and with Pedroia, like, who says he's going to be able to come back and swing the bat? I mean, Grady Sizemore couldn't do it, and he was much younger than Pedroia. And I don't know. Pedroia was 1-for-28 if you include the AAA at-bats this year. He just, I don't know. It's just an extreme long shot to me that he'll come back. Recovering is one thing, and being able to play again at a major league level is a whole different thing. So, and then just to wrap up my thoughts, I'm going to agree with you on the Phillies so far. I think the Nationals could emerge, like I said. And don't discount the Cubs, though. You know, if they can somehow find a way to eliminate some money, I think Bryant is making over $10 million, because I forget the term for it. He was like a super two guy, so he was able to hit arbitration early thanks to his MVP season. And I don't know that. I think Theo Epstein hates Scott Boras, and the JD Drew, you know, drama from before 2008 or 2007 rather, I think rubbed Theo the wrong way. Drew was a Boras client, and I just think he's already resigned to the fact that Bryant isn't going to be a long-term guy. So maybe he doesn't get peddled right away. Maybe he gets peddled in the last year or two of arbitration so that, you know, they at least get something. But I still think, you know, whether Bryant is or is not, you know, a part of the process of bringing Machado in, I still think they could find ways to be players for Machado one way or the other. And so any last thoughts on either the, you know, Machado or the Pedroia thing?
No, I just looked up while you were talking about it. Chris Bryant has 3 more years of arbitration, and he's going to have, you know, he made just under $11 million this year, so he's going to look at 13, 15, so he's going to make a ton of money without having an actual long-term contract in place. I just don't see a reason why they wouldn't go arbitration year 2, arbitration year 3 before they move him in 2021, if that's what they want to do. And the only thing I say with Boras, and I get 100%, like, I know Theo and Boras have had their differences, and there's been some rumblings that Epstein won't even, you know, deal with Boras people to a certain extent. I just hold on to this fact that the athlete themselves wouldn't necessarily let an agent, you know, just steamroll the process. Chris Bryant seems happy there, so there's a chance, I think, that maybe he has some say in it. You're probably right, and I'm probably wrong. It just, I was for the most part surprised about how much team control there is over Bryant. But you know, with that said, if you can get Machado for 8 years and know what you're going to have and have him under contract, and you don't have to deal with Boras because Machado is not a Boras guy, would you move Chris Bryant, you know, especially if it fills out the back end of your roster and gives you a couple prospects? It's something that, you know, and Theo is not shy from the splash deal. So the more you talk about it, the more you look at that angle, Terry, the more I like your Cubs commentary, you know. But that's it. I wish Machado nothing but the absolute worst. I hope he gets a one-year deal for $10 million, and he stinks, and he never makes his money because I hate the guy.
Yeah, and one last thing on Bryant. I think he would command close to a Chris Sale level haul in return. I think he would get at least, you know, one top five prospect, and then the number two would be somewhere in the top 10 or 15, and then they just kind of fill it out after that. But
well, I'll tell you right now, and because everything I do is like, I may not say it on the podcast, but in my mind, I'm always thinking, what's the effect on the Red Sox? I'd go Devers. I'd give him Groom. I'd give him maybe another prospect and go get Chris Bryant. Ugh. I mean, that's just a guy that, I mean, just thinking about it gets me excited. So I don't know. Maybe I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole in this podcast, but you know, I don't know, man, that would be exciting.
I'm not saying it wouldn't work out, you know, with that type of a trade, but I just my hopes are kind of high for Devers right now. So I just, you know, I'd kind of like to just stay, you know, on that path, but you know, at Fenway, Chris Bryant, yeah, he would, there would definitely be moonshots over the monster for sure.
Well, he hits to all, you know, fields, and he's a marketable guy. We talked about that last podcast. He's, you know, so he has an all-time great video, by the way, where he shows up to like a Division III school, and the coach is like, this guy's going to get some at bats, and he shows up and no one recognizes him for one reason or another, and he's just absolutely crushing home run after home run. If you haven't seen the video, it's great.
Okay, yeah, I'll have to check it, you know, look it up rather. All right, so let's get into Andrew Miller here, former Red Sox player, former Yankee as well. 33 years old, so this will be the last, you know, big contract that he likely signs. Some health concerns. He, you know, had a nagging knee injury, but I guess he's undergone some physicals. I don't know if that included imaging of any sort, but he basically does have a clean bill of health, and the market on him is expected to be pretty robust. MLB Trade Rumors has him 3 years, $27 million. Sport Track has him 3 years, $53 million. So quite the disparity there. You're going from $9 million annually on one side to 17.9 on the other. My suspicion is it'll probably be somewhere in the middle of that. But it's basically impossible to pinpoint any teams because half the league literally could be in on him. Most teams are willing to spend for, you know, at least one top flight reliever. If they don't have one, they're probably going to be in the market for one. And, you know, so, and if you Google him, I was... you know, doing a little bit of research before we came on, and I literally saw headlines for every major team saying that he should be a priority for them. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are how quickly you glanced over the health issues, because let me read you his splits for the last 2 years. 2017, he appeared in 57 games, 10 earned runs, which is banana land. That's an ERA of 1.44. He had a 0.83 whip. He didn't save games, and you know, win loss does not matter. 95 strikeouts. That is as dominant of a year as you know, that type of reliever. And why he's so valuable is that he's a Swiss Army knife type of guy. He doesn't appear to have any ego about closing. In fact, he's never really been a closer. He doesn't seem to go out there and say much anyways, but he certainly hasn't said anything about wanting to close. But he's nasty. I mean, he is absolutely filthy when he's healthy and he's on. And he's jumped around from team to team, which is a little bit surprising, given how good he's been. But then you jump to last year, 37 games, and he had two or three stints on the DL. So, okay, 16 earned runs. So that's a 4.24 ERA, which is not great. 1.38 whip, which is below average. Again, the wins and the saves don't matter, and he didn't have them anyways. But and his strikeout numbers were way down, 45 strikeouts. He's 33 years old. He's pitched some high-leverage situations, and he's another guy, like I've mentioned with Chris Sale, where his plant leg is actually like in the left-hand batter's box, and he's got to create a ton of whip and leverage on his body to get the ball to the strike zone. Miller's a little different, too. He's had some knee injuries. I think he had some foot injuries before where they kind of lingered. I think there's some significant questions with his health. Now, do I want the Red Sox to sign him? Absolutely, 100%. No more than 2 years, because if you're wrong, it can't be another four-year deal. It just can't. We can't keep doing this to ourselves. Where typically I don't have an issue with the contract, but it's when it's half a decade and it's hampering you for years on years when the player's gone, that's a problem for me. And so I'd overpay him, and you're the Red Sox, you can overpay him for 2 years and give him a ton of money, you know, if that's what it takes, especially if you're going to load up and go for it. Now, what does Andrew Miller not do for the Red Sox? He does not close games. It does not cure the fact that if you're going to spend on Miller, that 99.9% means you're not going to on Kimbrel or any other closer. So it creates an interesting situation where you have another guy that's willing to pitch in the, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth inning, but then you just have a whole bunch of guys who are willing to pitch in the sixth, seventh, and eighth inning, and you don't have one guy who's got to get the most important outs in the game. So I'm all in on Miller in Boston for 2 years, and I'd pay him Spotrac is out of its mind at 17.8. That's just ridiculous. $14 million, 2 years, $28 million, I'd do it. I'd do it because this team's loaded and ready to win again.
Yeah, and I mean, he wouldn't necessarily have to be the closer in Boston. You know, they could, you know, they got have basically have until July 31st to figure that out. But I mean, I'm just going on a report by CBSSports.com. They reported that his knee is apparently healthy. So, but the other thing that we need to factor in here is he is 33 years old, and everybody, you know, when they think Andrew Miller, they think playoffs 2016 when he was getting 5, 6, 7, 8 outs per appearance. And I think we can agree that he's not that type of a guy anymore. And realistically, you're just looking for him to hold down that eighth inning, that ninth inning, or whatever. And for 2 years, like you said, I'm optimistic he could be a guy that does that for any team that, you know, is willing to sign him. 3 years, that's a little dicey. You know, that's, you know, chances are that third year, you know, he could be dead money. So, you know, so I don't know, but that could be the sticking point. You know, there could be a dozen teams in on him for 2 years, and they're gonna hash it out with his agent. But if three or four teams are willing to go that third year, suddenly the market shrinks, and he's gonna, you know, end up on one of just those three or four teams. So it's tough to tell where the market could, you know, dictate which team he ends up with. But, you know, he was a Yankee, and they signed him thinking they were going to be competitive, and then it turned out they weren't competitive, so they traded him in 2016 to the Indians, and, you know, and they've had him ever since. But, he can pitch in any market. So I guess that's where I was going with that. He's pitched in Boston, pitched in Cleveland, pitched in New York, and so there's no real mystery, you know, as to who he is. So I'm not gonna place a team on him because, like I said, the market's so wide. I hope it's Boston, but it could be the Brewers. You know, they put a lot of emphasis on the bullpen, and you know, maybe New York brings him back because you know, Robertson is also a free agent. Maybe he'll get some looks by the Red Sox. Who knows? But it's just so impossible to pinpoint where he would go.
Well, I agree. And I do think that a third year will be in the mix. And we've talked about some of the options in the past. You could have a vesting option on innings. You could have a mutual option. You know, you could give him a 3-year contract with a 1-year opt out. You know, there's all sorts of options to sweeten the pot to make that third year a factor, but not necessarily a guarantee. I do think that the market's going to be pretty broad for him. No mid-market to small-market team. Like, the Rays are not getting in the Andrew Miller sweepstakes, the Marlins. You know, they're not – these teams aren't going to get in it. So it's not going to be so broad that everyone's a factor and it just drives the price out of this world. And I think they're going to be let me just get to your Brewers comment, because Chris earlier in the week said on the last podcast said – that he sees Kimbrel in Milwaukee as a real possibility. Like, their bullpen's legit, right? And there's no question about it. It was their strong point going into the NLDS. But, like, is every potential, you know, bullpen arm going to go to Milwaukee? Like, are they not going to go get some starting pitching? It just seems to me that, yeah, they have some good, they have a good lineup, and, you know, they got a bunch of guys that, you know, play really well together offensively and defensively, and they got a you know, an elite bullpen. It just seems to me that, like, all these relievers being tied to Milwaukee is just I'm almost like shrugging about it. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But with that said, Miller is going to be on the forefront of any, you know, upper mid to large market team that wants that guy, you know, that Swiss Army knife to get him over the top, because he is the type of guy that can get you over the top. He's the type of guy that can keep a one-run lead for multiple innings. So, you know, the Dodgers could be a factor, the Sox, the Yanks. I haven't heard that going back to Cleveland's, you know, not a possibility. You know, who knows what the Astros are thinking as far as maybe lengthening their bullpen. They've got a whole bunch of people to sign, so I don't see it. But you're right; it's really hard to do the prediction game. But I want him to be a Red Sox. So, you know, 2 years, $28 million with maybe a third year tacked on there in some sort of creative option type of situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be around 14, 15 annually, and then so. If it goes a third year, you know, it could be, you know, a $38 to $45 million deal if it's a 3-year contract. If not, it could be as much as 2 years, $30 million overall. But yeah, and interestingly, and I might reach out to some Brewers people, but they lost their pitching coach to the Reds, and then they lost two other coaches as well. Like, everybody just wanted to jump ship. And I mean, I think that team's future is fairly bright. They do need to address their rotation, but that was just a bit surprising. And getting back to the Red Sox, though, interestingly, Dave Dombrowski was the general manager who first drafted Andrew Miller in the Tigers organization. I think in 2004, and you know, he kind of came up through them. I forget, he might have ended up in Miami before the Red Sox, and he ended up with the Red Sox in 2011. And of course, even as late as then, the Red Sox were still trying to groom him into being a starting pitcher. And it wasn't until Valentine got there in 2012 where they converted him into a reliever, and it kind of started to take off. And he was pitching very well into the 2013 season when he broke his a bone in his foot there, and he always gave Valentine credit for that, you know. And he would say that a lot of people give Valentine heat, but he gives him credit for helping transform his career. And the other interesting note that does kind of involve Dombrowski is when Ben Sherrington, who was the Sox GM in 2014, was kind of selling off a bunch of players. Lester went to Oakland, so did Gomes. Lackey went to the Cardinals, and then Andrew Miller was like the big fish remaining, and it was his walk season, so it made perfect sense to trade him because we were on our way to a last place finish. And the two teams it came down to was the Detroit Tigers with Dave Dombrowski and then the Baltimore Orioles. But the Orioles were very stubborn and weren't willing to give up Eduardo Rodriguez in that trade initially. So as it got close to the 4 p.m. deadline, it was looking like an almost certainty that he was going to end up in Detroit. And they had the package all worked out. I don't know who was in the package, but apparently Sherrington and Dombrowski tentatively had agreed on something, and then the phone rang again from Dan Duquette in the Orioles front office, and he said, all right, we'll give you E-Rod. And then he ended up going to Baltimore after all. But Dombrowski has several connections to Miller over the years, so that'll make it kind of interesting if he ends up being in play for him this hot stove season. And, you know, you'll welcome it, I'll welcome it. I don't think there's any fan in Red Sox Nation that wouldn't like to see that happen again, especially, you know, if it means not bringing Kimbrel back, because, you know, even though he kind of got it together, you know, in the World Series, I think everybody, you know, was tired of having heart attack ninth innings with him on the mound, and we know who Miller is. So any final thoughts on him?
Yeah, if they sign him, I just don't know that it's – I don't think it's going to be as a closer, and I think you agree with me there. Just as a little side, MLB Trade Rumors has Kelly getting the same – contract that MLB Trade Rumors has for Miller, 3 years, $9 million per, except he's going to the Angels. So that creates an interesting little question, which is, if the money's the exact same, do you prefer Joe Kelly, who's coming off what he just did for you? He has absolutely no history of injury stuff. Right-handed arm, power arm, below average strike thrower. Andrew Miller on the opposite side, he's also had some big-time moments in October and November. Lefty, better stuff, also struggles at times with throwing strikes, but when he did get switched to the bullpen, he was better. So for me, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, but if the money's the same – and it's a three-year deal, just as a little aside, I would prefer Kelly because I think you get a little bit more guarantee about what you're going to get, especially health-wise.
I don't agree. I just don't trust Kelly over the course of a full season. Totally agree with the injury history and that he likely would be the more durable guy. But at the end of the day, he can fall off a cliff. Miller's the type of guy who I think can adapt, can come up with solutions a little bit quicker to kind of fix his game. And I would take Miller, you know, even if the third year is risky. But the thing with Kelly, too, is I can't remember if we covered this on a previous show or if we texted about it or whatever, but he's saying he's open to being a starter. So that makes his market a little more interesting, I guess, for lack of a better term. The Angels would be the team to sign him as a starter because that's a dumpster fire organization and they can't do anything right. So, but my preference would definitely be for Miller. And it's been a while since we've had a very above average or even an elite lefty reliever. And so I think Miller is the solution there. And then still have Brazier, still have Barnes, you know, for righties. And I'm not convinced that we might not go after two relievers even, you know, even though we do have Feltman and Lakins, both basically major league ready. But, yeah, but to answer your question, my preference is Miller.
Okay. I mean, I'm just, you know, to me, if you're going to get health, then I don't think there's any question. Miller's, you know, more dynamic, more flexible, pitches, you know, multiple innings at a time. It's just to me that the health stuff scares me, especially because part of my hypothetical was the third year. It just seems to me that just creates another situation where you may be sitting on a contract. You know, like Sandoval, you know, they were able to move off the Carl Crawford and some of these other deals, but it just seems to me that they just can't get out from underneath having these contracts they have to pay for players that are no longer in Boston. And a third year for Andrew Miller screams like, watch out, here it comes. So, you know, that was my thought in going, Kelly. I don't, and by the way, if you get two good years Adam Miller, and then he hurts his arm and just is done, I'm okay with that. I'm okay paying a Hollywood send-off final year for two good years, especially if one of them brings you a championship. So don't get me wrong, but you know that's where I'm at with it. And Terry, the last guy on our list is your World Series MVP. Grew up a Boston Red Sox fan, Steve Pierce. You want to lead off there?
Sure. I, you know, it's impossible to place him on a team for similar reasons as it is Miller. Pierce is just, he's going to be affordable. And, you know, so any team, you know, looking for a guy who can mash against lefties is going to be in the market for him. And he's 35, so he's not going to have a whole lot of leverage in terms of number of years. You know, so I'm expecting it to be a 1 or 2 year deal. And, you know, maybe thanks to his playoff performance instead of a $6 or $7 million deal annually. He did get $6 million this past year. Maybe he gets a bump up to 9 or 10. But that's still going to be affordable for literally any market out there. And I think he is who he is. I mean, he's always been he's always hit for decent average. And you know, he's been on a lot of teams and can play in a big market. So I don't know if the Red Sox are a fit because we still do have Moreland. I know you're not a big Travis guy, but he's going to be out of options at some point, and he might be viable, you know, also to platoon there, although I think he's a lefty, so maybe not. But you have Michael Chavis, Bobby Dalbec could possibly be up with a big club, maybe later in the season compared to Chavis. You know, you might be looking at more like All-Star break by the time Dalbec is ready, but I just don't think the Red Sox are an obvious fit, but that's not to say they don't sign him anyway. And then if one of those two prospects is absolutely destroying it in AAA, suddenly Pierce becomes a very tradable contract, and I'm pretty sure you would find a dance partner for him. So who knows, but you know, there's no mystery to him. He's a very solid player and very selfless as well, good clubhouse guy, so who wouldn't want him?
Well, that's absolutely true, and you just never know what the World Series performance and MVP is going to do. That, you know, that sort of stuff always results in one team getting crazy. You know, we've talked in a couple podcasts ago the difference between Evaldi's, Kelly's, you know, those guys, as Pierce, their value as a, you know, on a career track on a regular season basis versus what they just did in the last 6 weeks. Pierce's obviously falls in that category. I mean, if you have one team that's like, oh my God, this guy's a 912 OPS against left-handed pitching, that's, you know, especially if you have a bandbox, the guy could, you know, go out and have a monster year. However, he's 35. He doesn't really hit right-handed pitching. And he, I don't know that he's ever been a real everyday player. I mean, you know, it's amazing that he's been in the AL East and played on every single team. But at the same time, you know, he hasn't necessarily been on my radar. I don't think there's any question that he's a fit in this lineup. I think he's a perfect complement to Moreland. They have sought for the entire length of Moreland's 10 years of Boston Red Sox to find the piece that complements him. Steve Pierce seems to be that guy, obviously. And it's a nice story that he grew up a Sox fan and all that stuff. That doesn't play any factor for me because that, you know, it just doesn't. I don't care if you grew up in Quincy and, you know, went to Quincy High and, you know, played college baseball in Boston College, or you grew up in Antarctica and, you know, wherever. Whatever's best for the Boston Red Sox. I don't care about all the cutesy stories. I care about results. With that said, I do like Pierce coming back. I think it's a one-year deal with a two-year vest, where if he gets 450 plate appearances, you know, OPS over 9 against left-handed hitter, like some of those things that you want him for, you know, you work in a second year if he's still the guy that he's been. But I think if you're going multi-years for a guy that's 35 years old, it's just crazy. You're just, again, to get into that whole, like, do you want to pay for a guy who's not here type of situation. I just don't know that I'm a two-year guaranteed guy on Pierce. And he is a nice player, but he's not a superstar. He's not a guy you're going to, you know, just plug in the lineup every day and, you know, build your lineup around him. So I think Moreland was a two-year $9 million deal, 4.5 each. If you could get him for that type of money, because like you said, that's inherently a tradable contract, I would pull the trigger yesterday. I think it's going to take a little bit more. So I think you're going to be looking at like a two-year contract. The first year is like $7.5 million, and then the second year vests at around the same amount, based on, you know, the factors that, like, again, OPS against left-handed pitching, plate appearances, those sorts of things that you know, would give the team some protections on a second year.
Yeah, I mean, Moreland actually basically made the same money as him last year, 6.5. So he's on a two-year $13 million deal. That's probably about right for Pierce, you know, give or take $1 million or so on either side. The other thing to consider here, though, with Boston specifically, is Devers probably at this point has won the everyday job, you know, at third, so he'll get the bulk of the time there. You still have Bogarts, you know, basically every day at short. I mean, there's a lot of optimism that Pedroia could come back, and Cora said if he's ready and gets through spring training, then he'll reward him by letting him lead off, you know, on opening day. But to me, that's far-fetched, but that's just what's being said, you know, within the Red Sox. So Pedroia's going to probably play into the Pierce thing, because if Pedroia's not ready, then Nunez and Holt probably platoon second, and then you do have room, you know, for Pierce on the bench, you know, to platoon with Moreland. If Pedroia is back, as far-fetched as that is, then I just don't... I have a harder time trying to get Pierce onto the roster, because then Nunez probably sees time at first with Mitch Moreland, and then we don't know what's happening with the catcher situation. It does sound like Leon could get peddled, but if he doesn't, you still have Swihart. Maybe Swihart gets time at first. It could be a huge clusterfuck right now. So we kind of have to see how they feel about the other parts of their roster before we get too optimistic, I think, with Pierce. But that being said, you know, if it does end up being a two-year deal, whether it's one and a vesting option, they could go one with a player option, you know, and leave it up to Pierce, which is exactly what they did with Nunez. I have a harder time seeing that come into play, but you know, if it ends up being 2 years, he's probably getting $7 or $8 million per year, and I think that would be tops for him. He's not Mike Lowell, though. I mean, Mike Lowell in 2007, when he won the MVP, there were, you know, he had Big Poppy, who seemed like a more likely candidate for that than he was. Manny Ramirez, who had an epic walk-off in the ALDS that year. I mean, he could have been, you know, an MVP possibly. And then Mike Lowell, just, you know, he had the series of his life and he won it. And, you know, he was a few years younger than Pierce, or a couple years younger anyway, and got a 3-year, $36 million deal. But but Lowell was solid all year round. Pierce, you know, mostly against lefties. So I think the rest of the league knows who Steve Pierce is. They know that they're not getting October Steve Pierce for, you know, 6 full months. You know, he is who he is, and I think his value, you know, will basically be the same regardless of what he did in October anyway. So those are my thoughts.
Okay, yeah, I mean, again, with Pierce, just to put a button on it, I think, like Miller, the prediction game is going to be really hard, for two reasons. The first, like Miller, I think there's going to be a ton of teams involved. And by the way, Pierce is the type of guy who's going to be attractive to small and mid-market teams looking for a veteran presence in the middle of the lineup. So you just hate to see maybe some other teams that otherwise wouldn't be factors in prime free agents jump in and muddy up the market a little bit. And then second, again, the potential overvaluation of a guy who's coming off a splash, like winning a World Series MVP. So, you know, and then you made a pretty good point, you know, Pedroia being there, not being there, the unknown of it, it's holding the roster hostage to a certain extent. I think it's silly to think that he's going to be there on opening day. And I think it's silly to think that he's going to go back to being a guy who gets 600 plate appearances. So,
yeah, I agree, but you never know. You know, I guess wrong so many times the last couple of months with Cora, you know, and, you know, what his idea was going forward. So,
we'll see. Dombrowski, you know, this team has a division of church and state. Cora may have input, but it's Dombrowski's roster. And, you know, Dombrowski favors proven talent over young talent and over prospects. It's one of the reasons why his teams typically have a limited window to win a World Series. He has won other World Series. He won one with the Marlins. But it's also why he's known for eviscerating the farm system. So, you know, he's done things in past off seasons like trade 3 or 4 prospects for Kimbrel and you know, send prime top guys over in the Chris Sale deal. And, you know, so it's – I don't think this roster needs much, and that's why I like Pierce. He's just a perfect complement. That's why I like Miller, because he is going to solidify a bullpen, which, notwithstanding the playoffs, this bullpen sucked all year. And most people thought that when the Red Sox failed to the extent they would fail, and it was going to be, and we both said this in our predictions moving into the postseason, we thought it would be the bullpen that ultimately let the team down. And so I don't think you can necessarily ignore the bullpen now just because you won a World Series. It's still your weakness. So Miller's a perfect complement for that. He's a Swiss Army knife, like I've said. He's a multiple inning guy, like I've said. Pierce, again, you don't need to break the bank. We're not filling major holes. The hopefully Dombrowski, without the use of prospects, because he can't use the prospects unless it's a splash guy like Chris Bryant. So he's going to have to go out and do these, you know, he's going to have to go stick his finger in the dam with a guy like Pierce and Miller and, you know, and find guys that are maybe undervalued that have a proven track record and see if you can't get him and complement the roster, not overhaul the roster, complement the roster, because this team is geared to go try to win another one.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't see why we wouldn't. And, you know, we'll have to see what the Yankees do with their rotation, whether they get Paxton or Corbin or however. But, I mean, it's going to be hard not to give the Red Sox the edge, you know, as far as winning it, you know, winning the division, I mean, in 2019, and then, you know, seeing where they go after that. So, I don't know. We'll see. One notable trade that happened this week was kind of interesting. The Mariners traded their catcher, Mike Zunino, to the Tampa Bay Rays, and those two teams seem to do business quite a bit, actually. But they've done it again, and he's, you know, I mean, he's probably one of the better offensive catchers in the sport. And Guillermo Heredia and Malik Smith were the two, you know, big players that went back to Seattle in that deal. I know Tampa also got an arm, but I didn't know much about him. Chris would be all over this whole trade and the mechanics of it and whatnot. But what I take from that is that Tampa is going to be competitive this year. And we talk about Pierce. I mean, who says that Tampa couldn't be a landing spot there as well? You know, so I just think they're a team we're going to have to keep an eye on, basically, going forward. And, I mean, they could easily be a 90-plus win team again this year, for all we know.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I wish I said something when I was talking about Pierce, because the Rays were in the forefront of my mind when I was talking about mid to lower market teams being a factor and broadening the market. You know, Pierce has already played for the Devil Rays, so it's one of those things where he's already signed there, and I don't know anything about his tenure there, and, you know, whether it was, you know, fruitful for both sides, and or whether there was some angst upon separation. I'm not exactly sure, but I think you're dead on. And by the way, looking at this trade, they're obviously trying to replace the Wilson Ramos production, And this team was crazy good for what I thought going into the season was a significant lack of talent. So, and Cash gets those guys to play. You know, they show up and, you know, they beat teams they don't think they should. You don't think they should beat, and pitching matchups you think they should. They don't have a chance in, and a move like this seems to certainly help. You know, add a win or two that may get them into the postseason next year. So, something to think about. Terry, one thing before we sign off. Obviously, the format here for the time being is some hot stove stuff and picking a guy or two in just general Major League Baseball, and then one guy that has a direct impact on the Boston Red Sox. To any listener out there that has a specific individual they'd like us to talk about, please feel free to tweet at Terry and or I, and maybe we could do a Twitter poll or something like that to see who the listeners would be interested in. So just a little opportunity for some feedback for the podcast. We have been getting a lot of feedback recently. I try to tweet, and I know, Terry, you do too. I try to tweet at people, and we do appreciate the feedback. Please keep it coming. I think it makes the product better, and I think it helps us cater to what you guys want to listen to. And here's an opportunity for you guys to maybe pick the players that, you know, that we're going to talk about so that you have a specific interest in what we have to say. So thank you for the listeners out there. And Terry, I'll leave it up to you to sign us off.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're good. You know, we're just, I guess the next show will be probably Thursday at this point, if that works for you.
It does.
Yeah, and so between now and then, nothing looks imminent. You might see some trades more so than signings take place, but we'll just kind of monitor the market, and then probably tomorrow we'll come out with a tentative group of three players to profile in addition to any transactions that do happen, so... I guess we'll leave it at that.
Terry, thanks as always. Have a great night.
Yeah, you as well, man. 100th episode in the books. And thanks to everybody, though, that's kind of, you know, through the whole process. I mean, it's a much different show now than the first show was, and it's a much different show now than probably episode 60 was. So the numbers are good. The feedback, like Jeremy was just saying, is very good. If you want to help us out, the biggest thing you could do if you're an iTunes subscriber is to give us a rating, hopefully 5 stars. You know, some positive comments would go a long way in terms of visibility, because that is the app or platform that most of the downloads for this podcast happen on. So that would be a huge help. But anyway, thanks again to everyone who's listened throughout the last year and a half. I can't believe it's been 100, but before you know it, it'll be 200. So, you know, I enjoy it very much. Jeremy, still relatively new, but has, I'm guessing, at least a dozen or so. Well, probably more than that now because we did so many during the playoffs, but you know, he's been around the last couple of months and enjoys it just as much as I do. So it's a nice thing we have going. And Liz will be back with us on Thursday. She's been doing some vacationing the last couple of weeks, so be nice to have her back, and we'll go from there. So everybody have a good start to your week, and we will be back with you Thursday night, Friday morning, whenever you happen to listen. Take care.
I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I sleepwalk through the days when there's a West Coast swing. Married to the TV and the radio. For tickets in October, I'd give anything.
insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.